Hi, and welcome back to Small Way Podcast with Jeremiah. Today, we reach episode number 305. Wow, that's a lot. If you're new to this podcast, hi, I'm Jeremiah. On this podcast, we motivate you to become the best person you can be. If you're one of the originals on the podcast, hey, I miss you guys. Today, we have a very special guest. We have someone named Miss Stacy. Well, I'm not even going to say her full name. I'm not even going to explain who she is because she's here with me right now. Miss Stacy, go ahead and take it away.
Okay, my name is Stacy Domalski. I know that's a mouthful. And I am a producer and a story editor and author here in Hollywood, California. And what I do is I help everybody from retirees to studio executives find, write, and share their stories in the form of books and movies. And what I have found, I got started in screenwriting and then moved on to production. And what I realized is when you create a movie or any piece of content for video or streaming or television, whatever, the steps are always the same. It all starts with the story. And the story has to be developed and it has to have a beginning, middle, and end and conflict and turning points and all these things. And it doesn't matter if you're writing a two-hour movie or a 300-page book or a blog post that's 500 words. It all has that same story structure. So what I did was I took my magical story development unicorn skills and I offered them to people who wanted to write their own books, who weren't necessarily writers, because it's kind of a little known fact in Hollywood that a lot of the new content that comes out is not developed, the original ideas are not from writers. A lot of them obviously are, but somebody has a great idea for a streaming series or even a web series or whatever, and then what they do is they work with another writer or writer producer or executive producer to develop the story. And some of you may have heard of development hell, you know, in Hollywood. And that's when they just can't break the story. They go round and round and they can't figure out what the story is. Well, that same process is for when you write a book. So there's a lot of people out there who have said, I want to write a book, or everybody says I should write a book. I have this amazing thing that happened to me when I was, you know, younger or whatever. And then they sit down to do it and they just don't even know where to start, or they start and they start rambling on and on forever. And so what they do is they give up, and the excuse they give themselves is, I'm just not a writer. And that's not the reason that they fail. The reason is they fail is that they don't know how to develop the story. So that's where I come in. I help people develop their stories for books and movies. And I'll be honest with you, since I started doing it for books, that part of my business has really taken off. So obviously, when I help people develop the stories for their books, you know, those projects are smaller and quicker, so I get more of those. And then when I work on a television or movie project, I'm usually brought in as what they call a script doctor, because I studied story structure as a grad student. Mm-hmm. And so I come in for that. So those are bigger projects that last longer. But, you know, I would need lots of those bigger projects that last longer. And in the meantime, helping people develop their stories for their books has been a nice, you know, in-between thing. And I love doing it because I get to work with people more on a personal level and I get to see it through, you know, fruition. Because a lot of times the things I work on for Hollywood either never get made or they get made and they get shelved. And it's kind of like, I still get paid, but it's disappointing because you want to see the fruition of your work.
Right.
And yeah. And so I love working with people. I love and hearing their stories. I love the looks on their faces and the joy in their heart when they see this story actually come to life as a book that they never thought was possible. And a lot of them do publish and get it out there on Amazon, but a lot of them do it as a legacy for their, you know, for their family. They just want like the story of how they grew up in a completely different time period, mid 20th century or whatever, and things were different. And they just want to document that for their family going on. So they will write a book and it'll be beautiful and it's published, but they don't sell it, you know, in the general public. So there's all kinds of different ways for people to do it. And the thing that really impressed me that I didn't count on when I decided to start doing this is how much joy is, that it brings these people, so much so that I really do feel it changes things. It changes lives. It changes perspective. People will share their story in a very vulnerable way. Other people read it. And I think it promotes compassion in a world that desperately needs to understand the commonality of being human. And so it's nice because I didn't know that that would be the wonderful byproduct of having people authentically share their stories from the heart with the world or with their families or whoever they're sharing them with. And so I actually now teach story development and self-publishing at Pasadena City College and Glendale Community College here in Los Angeles. So,
wow. So yeah.
I know. I just kind of like took the ball and ran with it. Like, okay, first question.
I love that. I love that. No, now I have a very personal question for you.
Sure.
You, as essentially a story editor, someone who's able to create diamonds from dust, what are some of your favorite books? Who are some of your favorite authors?
Okay, first and foremost, I'm a big fan of Mark Twain, because it doesn't seem like it now, but he was writing about some very, very kind of dicey things back in, you know, the back in his day, because he was the first one to actually put race differences into literature and, children in peril, you know, Huck Finn and all this kind of stuff. I mean, his stories are, and they're very conversational. He was also one of the first writers to write in such a way that it was like this guy just sitting down and telling you a story, instead of before that, writing was very formal, very Elizabethan, you know, just very proper English. And he just wrote the way that you spoke. That said, some more contemporary writers that I like are, I love Stephen King. I just love Stephen King. And it, not just his horror stuff, but he wrote a wonderful book about his writing process called On Writing. And if anybody out there is looking to get into writing, you have to read that book. It's not written in a way that, you know, you have to be a scholar to understand it. It's just, again, like Mark Twain, I just like plain writing that everybody can understand. And so that's a great one. And I also love a little known author named Celia Rivenbark. And she used to be a columnist for a paper in South Carolina. And she is just hysterical. She is funny. She wrote a humor column that now has morphed into many, many kind of essay books. But oh my gosh, she's hysterical. My background is that I started out as a stand-up comic. That's how I got into Hollywood in the first place, is somebody saw me on stage and they said, when I was much younger, and said, hey, you're really good at storytelling. Do you write? And I said, well, yeah, who do you think wrote the stuff coming out of my mouth? You know, so they hired me to polish a screenplay, and I did a good job apparently, because I kept getting hired to do that kind of thing. So then after that, I decided to go back to school. I went to UCLA and studied screenwriting through their professional development film program. And so I literally studied story structure. And because of that, you know, my own storytelling skills of getting on stage and telling funny stories got better. And I got better also polishing other people's scripts. And then now that serves me well doing what I do, help people to identify and structure their own story so that they are in a book that other people will want to read. So anyway, my favorite authors range from classical to horror to comedy.
Love that. Now, speaking of you, that you were a comedian, how important is storytelling to a comedian? Because what I don't tell people is I used to do stand-up when I was living in the East Coast. Of course, I stopped it at the time, but how important when you're writing your own stuff and you look at comedians such as Eddie Murphy or Eddie Griffin, or you look at the late great Robin Williams and how their storytelling went, how important was that?
It's very important. There's actually two kinds of stand-up comedy. Well, there's lots, but basically there's two kinds of stand-up comedy. There's people who tell jokes. So it's a setup, punch, you know, like, and that was an older form of comedy, like Don Rickles does that. Even to some degree, Jerry Seinfeld does that. He does tell a story, say, about, you know, a sock in a dryer. It's escaping, for example. But what he'll do is he'll tell a bunch of little jokes strung together that tell a story about a sock in a dryer trying to escape. But there's also the kind of stand-up comedy where it's almost like long-form improv, where you just get up and you just tell a story, and you're not worried about every other thing coming out of your mouth generating a laugh. What you're doing is you're engaging them into a really intriguing, funny story. And they're kind of more on the edge of their seats, really listening to you. And they might giggle here and there, but it's not a huge guffaw. And that's kind of this type of story or type of stand-up that I did. And in fact, I kind of did it before it became a thing. And I actually had club owners telling me, you know, can you be more funny? They're not laughing. And yet when I would be done, people would come up to me and go, oh my God, I loved your story. You are so funny. And that was kind of felt weird because they weren't like doubled over crying with laughter. They were giggling here and there, but they were totally engrossed in the story. And so a lot of things have popped up that allow that kind of comedy, you know, storytelling comedy to take place. Things like, you know, The Moth, you know, and there's all, especially in LA, there's all kinds of little storytelling groups that pop up in wine bars and club, you know, little underground clubs and all that. And even they're getting known. There are storytellers like that are getting known in the big clubs, like, you know, the Comedy Store and the Laugh Factory and all that kind of stuff. So both types of comedy are completely legit, but it's a lot easier now for a comedic storyteller to get on stage and do their thing than it was, say, you know, 20, even 10 years ago. Storytelling is really taking its place at the table as a legitimate art form in comedy.
Yeah, I've been noticing that as well. Whether I listen to the Dave Chappelle was more like you have your punchlines here and there, but you think.
Oh, I think Dave Chappelle is an excellent example of that. He's one of my favorite comedians. And I just saw him live not that long ago at the Hollywood Bowl, and he was amazing. So he does that. He tells a story, and it could go on for quite a while before there's a big laugh. Mm-hmm. But you cannot turn away. You know, you're sitting there listening with the hugest smile on your face. You're not, you know, guffawing crazy, but then he does get those laughs too. You know, he'll get to a point where he'll deliver a punchline, and it was kind of a long way to get there, but it was worth it. So he's an incredible storyteller, which is why he is the recipient of, I think it was last year's or the year before, the Mark Twain Award, which is the highest award you can get in comedy.
That's true. That's very true. Now, tell me, what are some of your favorite things about dealing with studios, with you being essentially in the background and trying to proofread all of the scripts and make sure everything fits? What are some of the benefits?
I want to write screenplays, and I studied it in college, but even with all of that, reading other people's work and seeing what gets produced is my favorite thing. And I have to tell you, I don't agree with all of it in terms of, I never disagree with someone's story. Someone's story is someone's story, but I do have an opinion on how it's executed, which is why I like to help other people write their book. I want to see it in a way that would make sense to the viewer or the audience so that we're not wasting their time. I feel really bad when I read a book that I don't like, and I seldom start a book and not finish it, or start a movie I'm watching and not finish it, because I feel like, okay, that book or that movie got done. I'm going to see it through to the end. Because sometimes something is not, you don't understand it until the very end, and then kind of like, oh, I get it now. But if I get to the end of a book or a movie and I don't think it was done well, I'm angry. I want that time. I don't even care about the money. I want that time back, you know? So I love reading other people's work to see what it's getting produced. And, you know, because by the time it comes out, yeah, you can tell by box office, but I want to know what they're buying before that. I want to know what studios are buying with the idea to make it, to put tens and hundreds of thousands of dollars in it to make it. Right. And so that would be my favorite thing, is I get to read a lot. I get to read a lot of the things I like to produce.
How would you motivate someone who wants to be an author, but maybe society or their schools are telling him, oh, you can't be an author because the way how you think or the way how you talk? Because I've read a book with a female with dyslexia, and it became a New York Times bestseller. And it was unique because the way how it was written, it wasn't written like a casual book. You had words here, you had words here, this word here. So, and for you to understand it, you have to understand their mentality and put those words together in your own brain. Mm-hmm. So how would you motivate that person to say, even though you may have learning challenges, or you may feel like you word things a different way, or you may feel, or you may put things in a different type of way, keep trying, because there's examples of where people with learning disabilities became New York Times bestsellers. Mm-hmm.
So I've had people say to me, will you read my manuscript and tell me if you think it's any good? Or they'll say, can I tell you what my story is, and you tell me if you think that I should write it? And I always say, you know what? I don't have to read it ahead of time. I don't have to hear it, what you think you want to write. Everybody has a story to tell. Everybody. And so the person who had dyslexia, she obviously had a story to tell. And it took, I'll be honest, it took somebody like me to help her to say, okay, I see what you're trying to do. And I know how we can package that so that other people will see what you're trying to do as well. There's really no word for what I do for people who want to write books. What I do for people who want to make movies is a producer. So I take that producer role for writing. Now, if a person is just listening to this podcast and they say, gosh, I've had this idea for a book forever, how should I start? I tell everybody in my classes and in my books, I tell everybody, the first thing you have to do is figure out what is your message. What is it that you're trying to say? What is that initial, that wisdom in your heart that you want to share, whatever it is you learned as a result of going on that journey? Because once you can write that message down on a piece of paper and say two or three sentences, or maybe a short paragraph at most, then that is your guiding light for the rest, for when you write your book. Anything that you write in your book has to support that message. And if you start going off on a tangent on something that isn't really related to that, then you tell yourself, nope, I got to get back on the path and follow that message. So that would be the first thing I would tell somebody. The second thing, if I were actually speaking with somebody, like, you know, at a cocktail party or something, I, in addition, the classes I teach at the colleges, I also offer independently. So you don't have to be at the college to take them. And so from my website, I do offer a class called Turn Your Story Into a Book. And I offer a class called 9 Steps to Self-Publish Your Book, which is a class that goes with, you can buy 9 Steps to Self-Publish Your Book as a book, but then I have a class that shows you, you know, that steps you through it. And in both cases, the classes are only 3 hours each. I usually schedule them on a Saturday morning from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. West Coast Pacific time. And they're $49. And that's it. And that's a great way for people to get started to see if they want to write their book. And if they've already started writing, or they know that they're going to write it, how to self-publish. I do think in today's world, unless you are an influencer on TikTok or Instagram and have this huge following, if unless you're an influencer on some form of social media, podcasts like you, unless you have, if you don't have that, the best option is self-publishing, which is not impossible to do. It's, I'm not going to say it's easy because it's time consuming. There's several steps to it and you do have to invest a little of your own money into self-publishing, but if you go the distance, you can definitely get your book out there on Amazon and in bookstores, and you can definitely get sales from it to pay yourself back, which I go over all that in my class, including the cost of self-publishing at every step of the way.
Respect it. All right. On a more lighthearted note, if you could have dinner with anyone, who would it be?
If I could, gosh, there's just so many people. If I could have dinner with anyone, I think it would have to be like one of my favorite, you know, filmmakers or, you know, can they be dead?
Dead or alive.
Well, okay. Well, going back, I'd love to have dinner. I'm going to give you like three. I'd love to have dinner with Mark Twain, cause I want to pick his brain on his writing process. I would love to have dinner with Barbara Streisand. Ooh. I've never met her. I've met a lot of celebrities, but I've never met her. And the reason is because she's not a writer, but she is, she's an artist who morphed her way into becoming a producer, a director. You know, she's a multi-hyphenate, and she did a lot of things back in the day when it was hard for women to do those things. And so I would love to sit down and pick her brain of like, how did you do that? And then I would like to have dinner with Dave Chappelle, because I think it would be hysterical. I think we would have a good time. I can just tell from his comedy that we have the same sensibility. He talks about his family and his wife and his kids. And, you know, I have kids just a little older than his kids. And I would just love to get inside that brain of his and really dig a little bit deeper. So those three people, maybe not, and not on the same night. I don't want them all in the same room with me together, because I want to just focus on each one of them individually when I have dinner with them. I don't want to share them with anyone.
I just, I feel that. All right. Now, Ms. Stacy, do you have anything that you would like to promote? We saw the 9-step program.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, my book, which is on Amazon, it's called, my brand is The Memoir Midwife. And it doesn't have to be a memoir. I just like the alliteration of memoir midwife. But the book is 9 steps to self-publish your book. And I go through everything from step one, write the book, to getting it on Amazon. So every step of the way, and some of those steps you can be doing while you're writing your book. So I do encourage anybody who is looking to write a book to go check it out on Amazon. You can find it by searching on my name, Stacy, S-T-A-C-Y, no E, Dymalski, D-Y-M-A-L-S-K-I, which I'm sure it'll be in the written part of this podcast as well. I also encourage you to go to my website, which is thememoirmidwife.com, all one word, .com. And I have a drop-down menu on classes and resources and other things that you can look at in order to get started writing your book, or help you finish your book, or if you've already got a first draft, help you edit your book. And if you've already got it all edited, help you self-publish your book. I also have resources if you are one of those TikTok kind of people who are looking for a publisher. I can help you find that too, because I have a lot of connections. So any step of the way you are in telling your story, I can help you. And I do offer a free 30-minute consultation. If somebody wants to just say, hey, I heard you on Smart Way podcast, and I really wanted to just spend a few minutes with you telling you what I'm thinking of doing and getting your feedback on that. That's perfectly fine too.
Cool. Well, of course, sadly, this is the worst part of the job. But thank you so much, Ms. Stacy. I have a lot of work to do to go ahead and publish this bad boy out. I will talk to you very shortly.
Okay, I really appreciate you having me on, and best of luck on your podcast. I've listened to a few episodes and I really like what you're doing here.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you. Well, to the next episode of Smart Way Podcast, this is Jeremiah.